Roll call for Tuesday, February 21st. Agar?
Present.
Anderson?
Here.
Anselmi Dalton?
Here.
Baldwin?
Hi.
Barnard?
Here.
Boner?
Here.
Bouchard?
Here.
Burns?
Here.
Case?
Present.
Christensen?
Here.
Coe?
Here.
Dockstetter?
Here.
Driscoll?
Here.
Ellis?
Here.
Emmerich?
Here.
Hastert? Hicks.
Here.
Kinski.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Moniz.
Here.
Nethercott.
Here.
Pappas.
Here.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Rothfuss.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Von Fladern.
Excused.
Wasserberger.
Here.
President Bebout.
Here.
29 present, 1 excused.
Prayer this afternoon will be by the Reverend Richard Gilbert. Please rise.
President Bebout, Senators,
staff, we're off to a good start. It's your president is still enjoying his 4 days off. Go ahead, Reverend.
You're back in duty, right?
Yes, sir.
Thank you for the privilege of being your chaplain this week and sharing prayer with you. Yesterday was President's Day, and for my prayer, I would like to use the thoughts and the words of President Abraham Lincoln in his second inaugural address, March 4, 1865. May we pray. We have addressed you with many names, Father, Lord, God, Almighty, and like Lincoln, we may believe you have your own providence and purpose, and it is our search to discover what that may be. We pray your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Knowing your will remain current issues in finance, education, and the plethora of other bills on our plate, and it is not always easy to discern your will within our lives. So fondly do we hope, and fervently do we pray, that with malice toward none, and with charity for all, may you, O God, give us insight to see the right, and the wherewithal to do the right, and to finish the work we are in. In the words of Jesus quoted by Lincoln, "Let us judge not, that we be not judged." Almighty God, it is an honor to reflect upon the words of one of the world's great statesmen and to seek to use his valued vision within our own time. Amen.
Amen.
41 days after Lincoln delivered his inaugural, he was dead.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Senator Moniz.
If I could have privilege of the floor.
You may.
Thank you. As members of the Senate, if you would greet the ASUW students, the student body government for the University of Wyoming, in our gallery back, if you'd give them a warm welcome.
Welcome. It's good to see you. Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Mr. President, it's a great pleasure to introduce these young men today to you. You know, I've always been really involved in scouting, and I was an assistant scoutmaster. But actually, as a kid, though, I didn't get very far. I couldn't get past the second class, Mr. President. But I want to introduce to you three Eagle Scouts who are with us today in the gallery. And if they would stand as I read their names. We've got Roy Moat from Wheatland, Troop 47. All right. Yes. And we have Aaron Sorensen from Laramie. That's Troop 138. Look at those merit badges. I'm surprised they can stand. And we have Troy
Musman, from also from Laramie, Troop 137, Mr. President. They're accompanied by Lewis Peaks, their counselor, and Carrie Anson, district director. Hooray!
Hooray!
Okay, congratulations.
Congratulations. That's quite an honor. We're very proud of you. How many of you outstanding senators were Eagle Scouts? One. Senator Coe. No, you weren't. You didn't get past the Cub Scouts, Senator Coe. Senator Hastert.
May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Members of the Senate, one of our own has a birthday today. Who would that be? Senator Landon, maybe? Senator Landon. I think we ought to kick it off with a little happy birthday to Senator Landon.
Absolutely. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Billy. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, Bill. In case any of you haven't noticed, excuse me, Senator Landon, he has some new boots on, probably a birthday gift. There they are. Senator Landon, you want privilege of the floor?
Could have privileges of the floor. I was going to point out that somebody dear to me provided these brand new boots. You can come look at them. I did want to say, Mr. President, I'm just glad I made another one. And after all that budget process early in the session, I wasn't sure for a while, but thank you, everybody. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Senator Moniz, you're not done.
Thanks, Mr. President. Again, members of the Senate, if you could greet students from the Snowy Range Academy in Laramie, the 8th grade, with Mr. Heiser. If you'd welcome them, thank you.
Welcome to the Senate. I wish all of you could see the view that I see from up here. I see a lot of faces that are smiling, charged, had a good 4 days off. Senator Scott got a haircut. Senator Burns got one, but I think he got that before he left. Let's see. Senator Meyer, you didn't get a haircut. There's several other. Senator Perkins got a haircut. Senator Coe got a haircut. I was getting to Senator Rothfuss got a haircut. Anyway, I hope you all had an opportunity to get home and be with your family and friends, and it was a break we all needed, and I just look out there and I see all those wonderful faces, and now we get ready for the next 8 days and to do what we do and take care of this great state of Wyoming. Reading correction approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of February 16, 2017 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Bouchard, Chairman.
Are there any corrections or objections? There being none, the report is adopted. Doctor for the day is Dr. Christian Flanders. She's from the University of Wyoming Family Medicine here in Cheyenne. The nurse for the day is Cynthia Labonte. She's an RN, Wyoming State Board of Nursing. Welcome, both of you.
What's that?
What'd you say? Today in Wyoming history, in 1903, Wyoming established a gift and estate tax. Wyoming still has such a tax, but it only applies at very substantial income levels. How many of you remember when we used that to balance a budget back in what year was it, Senator Wasserberger? About 94 or 95, we used that to balance a budget. 94. Today is day 29 of the proposed 37-day session. Members of the Senate, I hope you're shooting for 37 days. I am. Okay, we have a new intern today from Riverton High School. Riverton, Donathan Peters. Come up, Donathan. Come on up here. I want you to look at this young man. He's got his bow tie. Come right around here, Donathan. Right around here. Don't be nervous. These are just senators. That's okay. Welcome. We have something for you to wear while you service for the next couple of weeks. It's good to have you here.
Excellent.
Would you like to say something before we get started?
Sure.
Please, the floor is yours.
I'd like to say thank you very much for having me, and I'm excited to learn about the legislative process from y'all. Thank you.
Welcome. He's already learned one important thing, brevity. It really does work. Maybe we could send you down the other end of the building for an hour or two. I didn't say that. Okay. Concurrences. Well, you don't have that first. Message from the House.
From the House of Representatives, February 16, 2017. Message number 330. Third reading passed. Mr. President, the following bills passed the House on third reading by the votes indicated. Senate file number 47, State Institution Revenue Accounts, ayes 53, noes 2, excused 5. Message number 331. Senate file 48, Farm Loan Program Amendments, ayes 53, noes 2, excused 5. Message number 332, Senate file number 52, Fund Balance Definition, ayes 55, excused 5. Message number 333, Senate file number 59, Government Ethics Clerks of the District Courts, ayes 55, excused 5. Message number 334, Senate file number 100, Limited Liability Companies, ayes 55, excused 5. Message number 336, Senate Joint Resolution Number 2, Federal Land, Wind, and Solar Energy Revenue, State Share, ayes 55, excused 5. Message number 329, Concurrence Requested. Mr. President, the following Senate files passed on third reading in amended form as by the votes indicated. Senate file number 36, ayes 40, noes 15, excused 5. Message number 337, Senate file 45, ayes 48, noes 7, excused 5. Message number 335, ayes 55, excused 5. Signed, Wendy Harding, House Chief Clerk.
Introduction of House Bills. House Bill 63, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 63, Game Animal Licenses Limitations, sponsored by Representative Barlow, an act relating to game and fish, passed the House, ayes 47, noes 12, excused 1.
House Bill 63 would be referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. House Bill 77, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 77, In-State Tuition, AmeriCorps Service, sponsored by Representative Zwanitzer, an act relating to higher education, passed the House, ayes 33, noes 25, excused 2.
House Bill 77, referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, House Bill 101, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 101, School Districts Veterans Employment Preference, sponsored by Representative Hollinen, an act relating to veterans. Passed the House, ayes 48, noes 10, excused 2.
House Bill 101, and referred to Committee Number 6, Transportation. Now, wait a minute. That's right, isn't it? Excuse me, Committee Number 8, Transportation. Reports from standing committees.
February 16, 2017. Mr. President, your Committee Number 6, to whom was referred House Bill 114, Engrossed, Service and Assistance Animals, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Barnard, Boner, Emmerich, and Moniz, Senator Emmerich, Chair. Mr. President, your Committee Number 8, to whom was referred House Bill 280, Vehicle Registration Requirements, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Baldwin, Christensen, and Meyer, excused, Senator Agar, Senator Meyer, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number three, to whom was referred House Bill 11, engrossed, discounted cash flow implementation process, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Ellis, Kinski, Peterson, and Wasserberger, Senator Peterson, Chair. Mr. President, your committee number three, to whom was referred House Bill 119, engrossed, Senior Citizen Districts Use of Revenues, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Ellis, Kinski, Peterson, and Wasserberger. No, Senator Case, Senator Peterson, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number seven, to whom was referred House Bill 266, engrossed, Study on Evaluation Requirements for Small Cities and Towns, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Agar, Case, Nethercott, Scott, Senator Pappas, Senator Case, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number seven, to whom was referred House Bill 222, engrossed, Background Checks, Access to Federal Tax Information, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Agar, Case, Nethercott, and Scott. Excused, Senator Pappas. Senator Case, Chairman.
Members of the Senate, I'm reminding you that Friday is the last day for bills out of committee in the Senate. Friday's the last day. Bills on second reading. House Bill 26, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 26, engrossed, Bark Beetle Program Funding, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee.
House Bill 26, can be read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, so ordered. House Bill 56, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 56, engrossed, Mobile Homes Title Status Upon Permanent Foundation.
House Bill 56, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the House bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 111, second reading of the House bill.
House Bill 111, County Collective Accounts.
House Bill 111, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 152, second reading of the House bill.
House Bill 152, engrossed, Search and Rescue Operations.
House Bill 152, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 164, second reading of the House bill.
House Bill 164, Professional Licensing Boards, Telemedicine, Telehealth.
House Bill 164, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 231, second reading of the House bill.
House Bill 231, engrossed, Firearm Possession, Allow Felons Antique Firearms.
House Bill 231, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Bill's on third reading. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
Mr. President, after all weekend, I do have a consent list. We have, for our consent list, and I move the consent list, which is as follows. House Bill 23, Secretary of State's Office Amendments. House Bill 44, Board of Engineers and Land Surveyors. House Bill 74, Agent Orange Health Awareness Month. House Bill 86, Omnibus Water Bill Construction. House Bill 90, Concealed Weapons, Military Family Applicants. House Bill 128, Tribal License Plates. House Bill 163, Elections, Recount Deposits. House Bill 183, Security for On-Deposit Public Funds. House Bill 221, Non-Resident Employer Bonding Requirements. And House Bill 254, Public Purpose Investments.
Would anyone like any of the House bills removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? House Bill 23, Secretary of State's Office Amendments. House Bill 44, Board of Professional Engineers and Land Surveyors. House Bill 74, Agent Orange Health Awareness Month. House Bill 86, Omnibus Water Bill Construction. House Bill 90, Concealed Weapons Military Family Applicants. House Bill 128, Tribal License Plates. House Bill 163, Elections, Recount Deposits. House Bill 183, Security for On-Deposit Public Funds. House Bill 221, non-resident employer bonding requirements, and House Bill 254, public purpose investments. Chief Clerk, please call the roll for the consent list.
On the consent list, Agar?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Anselmi Dalton? Baldwin?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Boner?
Aye.
Bouchard?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Excused.
Ellis?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Moniz?
Aye.
Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
Excused.
Wasserberger? Bebout?
Aye. Bebout, aye.
On the consent list, 28 aye, 2 excused. House Bill 23, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 23, 28 aye, 2 excused. House Bill 44, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 44, 28 aye, 2 excused. House Bill 74, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 74, 28 aye, 2 excused. House Bill 86, are there any changes? Closing vote. Meyer, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 86, 27 aye, 1 no, 2 excused. House Bill 90, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 90, 28 aye, 2 excused. House Bill 128, are there any changes? Burns, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 128, 27 aye, 1 no, 2 excused. House Bill 163, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Close. Bouchard, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 163, 26 aye, 2 no, 2 excused. House Bill 183, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 183, 28 aye, 2 excused. House Bill 221, are there any changes? Bouchard, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Bill 221, 27 aye, 1 no, 2 excused. House Bill 254, are there any changes? Scott conflict? Bouchard, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 254, 26 aye, 1 no, 2 excused, 1 conflict.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 23, Secretary of State's Office Amendments, House Bill 44, Board of Professional Engineers and Land Surveyors, House Bill 74, Agent Orange Health Awareness Month, House Bill 86, Omnibus Water Bill Construction, House Bill 90, Concealed Weapons, Military Family Applicants, House Bill 128, Tribal License Plates, House Bill 163, Election Recount Deposits, House Bill 183, Security for On-Deposit Public Funds, House Bill 221, Non-Resident Employer Bonding Requirements, and House Bill 254, Public Purpose Investments, have passed the Senate. House Bill 32, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 32, Engrossed, Ski Safety Act, sponsored by the Travel Committee, an act relating to skiing.
We have several amendments. Will the reading clerk please read in the first amendment?
House Bill 32, third reading amendment number 1 to Engrossed copy, page 7, line 4.
Senator Nethercott.
Thank you, President Bebout. I move the first third reading amendment to House Bill 32. Fellow senators, this amendment is quite simple. If you go to page 7 of House Bill 32, line 5, actually starting on line 4, you'll see that the current bill, as you voted for and passed, clearly currently requires a ski operator to mark or identify on trail maps the ski area boundaries. What this particular amendment does is also expands that to have them mark the actual boundaries with signs, ropes, or fences to skiers under conditions of ordinary visibility and indicate boundaries on trail maps of that area. So what this amendment really does is requires them to mark on the actual trails themselves what those boundaries are. So a pretty simple concept here, pretty reasonable in light of the scope of this particular bill that's being passed. I'd ask for your favorable consideration on this first third reading amendment. Stand for questions.
Further discussion? Senator Coe.
I'm trying to figure out what these little ski areas are going to do with this amendment. Because the way I read this amendment, you got to put a rope around the whole place. Pretty much it's got to be marked all around the whole place. This is going to be incredibly expensive for these little areas in particular. Up in my country, the little area that we were able to open back up with a nonprofit foundation, you know, pay huge insurance premiums as it is. But to put a rope around the whole place, the way I read this amendment, that's what it does. I ask that you vote against the amendment.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Also, for the bringer of the amendment, just some discussion on why we went from 2 years to 4 years in the statute of limitations. Thank you.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, on and against this amendment, we discussed this a lot in the TRW interim committee meetings that we had. We discussed it every meeting three times. We discussed this. The small group said it was too expensive. They mark their out of bounds when there's a cliff or anything like that dangerous. They put it on the trail map. It was all agreed that that's the way we would do it. As far as the 2 to 4 year, again, we discussed this time and again, how many years the people had to discuss the thing, and it was agreed that we would do it for 2 years. This is too much change in this late hour. Please vote against the amendment.
Senator Pappas.
It seems to me, though, putting signs, ropes, or fences visible to the skiers also creates additional obstacles that they can run into. So I think under those conditions, the actual accoutrements put onto the ski slope will make it much less safe. That's the way I read it.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. President, thank you. On and against the amendment, fellow members of the Senate, the original intent of this bill, as brought by the Travel Committee after much study, was to make sure that the 10 ski areas in Wyoming remain viable, and some of them are just a lawsuit away. I spoke again to the owner of one of my little local resorts. His three largest expenses are power, labor, and liability insurance. Just the liability insurance. That doesn't count as fire insurance and or any other type of insurance. That's true of the startup that we've got in our area. Again, it's another startup ski area, opening one that's been closed. $11,000, they don't even have a functioning lift yet. So the whole purpose of the bill was to simply copy what the other big ski states around us have done and said what and answered the question of the Wyoming Supreme Court. When you say under the Recreation Sports Act that people assume the inherent risks of the sport, the court said, please give us a list. And so the bill is responsive to giving the court a list that says these are what we consider to be the inherent risks. This is an attempt, this amendment, to muddy the waters so that when somebody runs into a tree and they want the resort to be liable for it, that their trial lawyer can get them in front of a jury. The intent of the bill is to say at the summary judgment stage, the judge can say, no, you were skiing, you assumed the risk, you hit a tree, case dismissed. And hopefully, if we can keep this bill clean as it is without this amendment, we will see these liability insurance premiums come down on against the amendment.
Thank Senator Anselmi Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would ask that we divide the amendment 1 through 8, line 8 being division number 1, and lines 9 and 10 being division number 2.
Okay, that's divisible. We're going to speak on lines, the first division, which is third reading amendment number 1, division 1, which is lines 1 through 8. Senator Rothfuss, are you speaking on that division?
Thank you, Mr. President. Yes, I am speaking on that division. On and for division number 1, I don't read this as providing that we have to rope in an entire ski area. It's pretty clear that you can have signs, you can have boundaries indicated on the trail maps of the area, and that you just have to make sure that there's a clear visibility that delineates. Mr. President, to me it seems that this is actually good from a liability standpoint. If you have clearly indicated signs of what is on and off limits, that just strengthens the piece of legislation. I realize that there would be some cost associated with putting up some signs and other appropriate indicators, but realistically, that's something that a ski area should be doing. There should be no ambiguity when it comes to where the boundaries are for a ski area. That's unreasonable that you would be skiing along and all of a sudden you would pass from within the ski area to the outside of the ski area without knowing you made that transition. I can't imagine that taking place, and if it does take place, it seems to me that that would certainly be something that would lead to liability on behalf of the ski operator. Division number 1 is a good proposed amendment that helps to provide clarity within the draft.
Okay. Senator Meyer, what we're going to do is, since we divided the amendment, everybody will get the chance to speak 2 times. So what I'm going to do is let Senator Nethercott speak first, since she brought the amendment. It'll be her first time, and then we'll get into the other people that wish to speak. Senator Nethercott, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. What I am definitely hearing here is that the body is deciding to put profits over people. The cost to put up signs to encourage people and to prevent people from going out of bounds is not too costly. It saves lives, actually. So what this is profits over people. And that's not what this state stands for. Responsible skiing is appropriate and proper in this case. This particular amendment simply requires a sign to notify skiers that they're about to go out of bounds, which I would suggest to this body is far more dangerous than maybe hitting a rope or running into that sign. This amendment is appropriate, it's proper, and I encourage your favorable consideration of it.
Senator Meyer, for your first time on the division number 1.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know, I guess I have to use my memory of back when in my college days when I did quite a little bit of skiing, had season pass up at one of the Colorado resorts and spent quite a little bit of time down there. And there was a lot of these runs that, you know, sometimes to me the trees weren't really close, and you knew that if you wanted to, you could kind of duck out in there. And a few of us would take that time, and we'd duck out off the run. And you could find some shortcuts from one run to the other run. And not, you weren't supposed to be there. It wasn't on the run. But it was just one of those daredevil things that young kids do is try to go out and find some fresh snow. And there's some places where you can cut across on some of these different ski slopes and get from one slope to the other slope and maybe ski the top part of one and then cut across where you're not supposed to be and ski the bottom part of another one and go through the woods and different things where you're not supposed to be. And there are some places where, you know, it would protect the ski resort if they would just put up a few signs saying, you know, just an X with, you know, just a circle with the red thing through there with the skier saying, no, you can't go this way, guys. And, you know, it's out of bounds. And those, Mr. President, I think are reasonable. Now, if it was taken to the extreme, you know, where somebody said, yeah, you have to have a sign every 100 feet or you have to have a sign, you know, or a rope all the way down the ski slope. And then, Mr. President, that could possibly be unreasonable. But I think there's certainly places where signs would be appropriate instead of just at the head of the ski run down through the ski run. And I think what we need to look at, Mr. President, is that, you know, this isn't the last bite at this apple. This is going to be a difference from the House. And there'll be a difference between the House position and the Senate position. And I think there's some probably some wordsmithing that could go on in the conference committee about, you know, when practical or things like that, to where it would actually give some safety to the skiers and actually give some protection to the ski resorts. So I don't think we should dismiss this lightly. I think we should let the process work, Mr. President.
Senator Anderson, for your first time.
Mr. President, on and against Division 1 of First Amendment, we discussed this in committee also. The problem that the ski areas have is they work under Forest Service leases, and they can only do so many things in those leases. We even talked about wrapping trees, which they cannot do in the leases. They also can't put up signs and ropes everywhere. Now remember, this is talking about the boundaries. This isn't talking about the ski runs. This is their boundary area. Their boundary area is a lot larger than the area you're skiing on. The ski runs are not the boundary of the ski area. So you're talking about a huge area which wouldn't make any difference to any skier out around the boundary that is 200 yards away from the ski run. So the boundaries that we're asking to put ropes around right now isn't even in the view of the skier in a lot of cases. So on and against this amendment.
Division 1 of the amendment.
Division 1, excuse me.
Senator Scott, Division 1.
Yes, Mr. President, Division 1. Mr. President, it was said we are putting profits ahead of people. Mr. President, I don't think that's the right way to look at this. What we're doing here is regulating a predator-prey relationship. And what we're saying is that the predators are in danger of destroying the prey, putting them out of business so they're not there anymore because of the inherent risks of this thing. And so that's all we're doing, and we're trying to put some bounds on it, so that the prey, which is the ski areas, are still in business.
Further discussion before the sponsor speaks for a second time. Senator Nethercoff, for your second time on Division 1.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know, for the families of this state who are seriously injured or killed on these ski slopes, I certainly don't feel like they think that they're predators. And characterizing them that way is unfair. It is a situation where you're putting profits over people with this particular act. What I have heard is said the motivation for this act is to ensure the financial viability of these ski resorts to the detriment of those injured on them. There was no testimony provided that any of them have experienced any serious litigation, period. So I find that that's just absurd that the people who are severely injured and or killed are considered predators, rather than making sure that these ski resorts maintain a responsible business, ensuring the safety of our tourists and our citizens who use these resorts. For that, I stand on and for the amendment.
Okay, we're voting on third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 32, lines 1 through 8. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has failed. Division number 2, Senator Nethercott.
Mr. President, this division 2 deals with expanding the statute of limitations to 4 years. This is consistent with the entire scope of tort litigation in Wyoming. The statute of limitations is 4 years. There's only two exceptions to this, which is professional liability, which really relates to doctors, and the government. So we really are making ski resorts very, very special. And I'm not sure that that's appropriate in this case. They deserve the same statute of limitations as everyone else, rather than limiting it to 2 years. And I urge your favorable consideration of Division Amendment, or Division 2 to Amendment 1.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, neither on nor against, neither for nor against the amendment or this division of the amendment. I'm curious as to why, if anybody could tell us, why they moved this to 2 years instead of four. If, my understanding is the statute of limitations generally is 4, so I'm trying to understand why this was moved to 2.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, on the TRW committee, we discussed this a lot. Each time that both sides came to it, the first time they couldn't agree on it. Second time they said they would be able to agree. Third time they agreed on 2 years. That was the opposition side and the side for it. They said that the 2 years wouldn't make any difference. They were going to file lawsuits early. This does not preclude anybody from filing a lawsuit. They can still file a lawsuit. They can still get claims. This doesn't change anything. Just 2 years, so they have some reckoning of when they're going to be sued, so that the ski areas know when that's going to happen. On and against second division.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Just a question for the bringer of the amendment and those opposing it. My recollection is that all other the recreation statute in all other instances, there's only the main recreation statute. I think there's one other carve out for equine safety. Is that 2 years or 4 years? Just help us understand and that whether this is, because my recollection is 4 years, and this one makes it back to 2 years. And I just want to know if that's correct or what is it for the other recreational safety?
Senator Kinski.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment, certainly if you hit a tree in a ski area and you think somehow the resort owner is liable for that, you should know that and bring the claim within 2 years. I think the rationale for 2 rather than 4, 1 is based on what the statutes are in states surrounding us. After all, this is modeled on the states that are around us that have successful ski industries. And second is that when you take a very small insurance market like this, ski area liability, anything you can do to help improve or reduce the amount of litigation is going to help reduce the amount of the insurance premium burden laid back on these resorts. Hence, the reduction from 2 to 4 reduces that window, helping to bring the premiums down. I think if you really think the ski area is responsible for you hurting yourself on the slopes, you should bring the suit within 2 years on and against the amendment.
Just a second, Senator Perkins. Senator Meyer.
If we've taken docs down to 2 years, can anybody tell me whether or not the insurance rates actually went down, or was it just this thing? We promise that the increase won't go down as fast. You know, so I'm not sure whether or not what you're hoping to gain as far as reduction in insurance rates is actually going to occur, especially in light that necessarily there hasn't been any claims from what I've heard. So I'm trying to understand why the change, why we're treating this class of business differently than practically all other classes, and why we don't have the problem with the with equal access, I guess constitutionally, in this one, Mr. President. So, you know, those are some questions that I'd have, and if anybody can answer them, I'd appreciate it.
Anybody else for their first time? Senator Perkins, do you wish to speak for your second time?
Right. I think that if you follow, there's some reasons why you have longer statute limitations. And like I say, I don't know. My recollection is that the other recreational safety acts are 4 years. And so you could say that about every other recreational safety is, well, why don't you bring within 2 years? You know, if you fall off a horse or you're riding and you get hurt, you know you're hurt. Why don't you bring that action within 2 years? Or if you're on any other kind of landowner, if you're out on any kind of, whether you're hunting arrowheads or whether you're dirt biking or whether you're whatever you're doing out there in outdoor recreation that are covered by one of these acts, that argument holds for all those. You know you're hurt. Why don't you bring the lawsuit within 2 years? And the reason is because a lot of times two things happen. One is you don't know how bad, you don't know where it is. If you're injured, if you're seriously injured, sometimes it takes 2 years or more for your medical condition to stabilize, so you can actually figure out what your damages are. Otherwise, you're just forced into guessing. And so ultimately, you're providing a significant amount of liability, immunity from liability for for ski areas. And so I come back. There should be some compelling reason to drop this from 4 to 2 and treat this recreation, outdoor recreation, different from all other outdoor recreation.
Okay, Senator Ellicott for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would echo the words from the senator from Natrona County. The Wyoming Recreational Safety Youth Act is a 4-year statute of limitations, as mentioned previously. There are only two exceptions to this under Wyoming law. One is government claims and doctors. So as mentioned before, we are making ski resorts very special. One of the reasons why you want to extend the statute of limitations, particularly like this, is because these cases are really only being brought in the event of catastrophic injury. Plaintiff's lawyers aren't doing small injuries where somebody injured their knee and trying to sue a ski resort. The money's not there. It's catastrophic injury where the medical bills are extensive or someone has died. So when someone dies, the first response isn't typically to go find a lawyer to sue. There's a grieving process involved and just time to understand what happened so that you're not suing the wrong individuals, the wrong resort, and letting people really work through their injuries and their grieving process to allow for justice to occur. That's why it's appropriate to keep a 4-year statute of limitations, and that's why that's our law in Wyoming, except for in rare circumstances. Stand on and for Division 2.
Okay, we're voting on third reading amendment number 1, House Bill 32, Division 2, which are lines 9 and 10. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The amendment has failed.
Division.
Division being called for. All in favor, please stand. Opposed? Be about to know. Okay, the amendment has passed. Third reading amendment number 2. Reading clerk, please read that amendment in.
House Bill 32, third reading amendment number 2 to engrossed copy, page 9, line 18.
Senator Nethercott.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the second third reading amendment to House Bill 32. As you can see here on page 10 after line 7, what we are doing is we are adding subparagraph C there, which states that this act shall not apply to claims or actions involving gross negligence or intentional conduct. I certainly wouldn't expect that this body would support protecting intentional conduct. So if a ski resort intentionally does an act that causes injury to someone else, to a skier, that would not provide protection. So that particular component should not be of issue. So the question is, regarding gross negligence, So how this is typically defined is the want of even slight or scant care. So it's gross negligence. It is beyond ordinary negligence, which is what the bill serves to protect these ski resorts from, which requires reasonable care. We have protected ski resorts from using reasonable care under this act. We are simply saying, ski resorts, you are not protected for your gross negligence, which is the want of even slight or scant care. I stand for your favorable consideration of the second, third reading amendment.
Further discussion? Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, I apologize that I'm the only TRW member left of the Senate that was in the interim, and I have to speak on these every time. But we did discuss this also, and we agreed on the paragraph B that we put into the amendment, or the bill, excuse me. And that paragraph B says, actions based upon negligence of a person or ski area operator wherein the damage, injury, or death is not the result of inherent risk of skiing shall be pursued, and that's pursuant to the comparative fault. And that was the paragraph we put in to protect against the negligence. This amendment just doubles up the effort on the gross negligence on and against the amendment.
Further discussion. Senator Kinski.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, following up with my colleague from Natrona County, this does not insulate a resort owner for negligence or intentional acts. The purpose of this amendment is to make sure that a resort cannot get out of a lawsuit on summary judgment by clouding the issue and forcing it to go to a jury. All this bill does is says quite simply, when you go to a ski area, you assume the inherent risk of that activity, including changing weather conditions, falling off of a cliff, hitting a tree, running into a ski tower, and now we've added that all of those things, the ski towers, the signs, the poles, they all have to be clearly marked and visible from a distance. The only purpose of this amendment is so that a trial lawyer can create enough doubt that a case has to go to a jury. And the whole point of this bill is to allow dismissal of these cases when there's not an act of negligence or intentionality alleged, but rather somebody simply got hurt due to the inherent risks associated with the sport. On and against the amendment, let's keep this bill clean and simple.
Further discussion, Senator Offutt.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and for the amendment, paragraph B on page 10 that was discussed as a somewhat equivalent paragraph that's allowing for that negligence has puzzled me since we worked this in committee, because it's actions based upon negligence, which sounds good so far, but wherein the damage, injury, or death is not the result of an inherent risk of skiing, shall be preserved. So in this instance, any injury, death, or damage that is qualified under the inherent risk of skiing earlier doesn't matter if it's negligent or not. You can't sue for that. So paragraph B is utterly of no protection from negligence. It has the word negligence in it, but that is the extent to which it protects for negligence. This proposed amendment actually protects claims versus gross negligence, which is something that I believe was the intent perhaps of paragraph B, and I appreciate that was there in the first place. But a plain reading of paragraph B does not provide any protection from gross negligence. Mr. President, it seems to me that we need this new paragraph C to make it clear that gross negligence or intentional conduct would not be covered by this act, and I would assume that the body would not be trying to promote the fact that gross negligence or intentional conduct would be covered in this act. So I think this is an oversight for the original drafting that we need to ensure we have protected through this paragraph C, and I hope the body will support third reading amendment number 2.
Further discussion? Senator Perkins.
Just a question from the bringer of the amendment. As I go back and look at the inherent risks and as they're during those dangers or conditions which are part of the sport of skiing, including, and then you go through pages 2 and 3, and it basically kind of lists those things. I'm going looking, where could you have negligence, gross negligence, or even intentional misconduct in those areas? Because ultimately, I'm trying to come to grips with how do you get gross negligence or intentional acts with respect to inherent conditions. The only places I can find it are on page 2, line 20, where you would be snowmaking, and so you're doing something grossly negligent with respect to snowmaking. I'm struggling with that a little bit. I don't understand how that would work. I don't think there's not much negligence to be had on C or D, because those are collisions with natural objects and surface conditions. E is impact with ski lifts, tires, designs, posts, fences, enclosures, hydrants, water pipes, or other man-made structures and their components, although we've required those to be marked now. So I guess maybe there, if you didn't mark it, you could say it was intentionally not marked, or marked in grossly negligent ways. F is variations in steepness or terrain. I don't know that doesn't fit there very much. And then the last one is collisions with other skiers or skier vehicles. Again, that's subject to the marking. So as we look at that, I'm trying to figure out where you'd have negligence, much less gross negligence or intentional act, except with respect to marking. I don't understand quite how this works. If you could help me understand that, it'd make it a little easier to know whether to vote yes or no on this one.
Before you speak for your second time, anyone else for their first time? Senator Offer for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. For my second time, and directly to the majority floor leader's point, that's reminiscent of a conversation we had when we last debated this, which was the idea, for example, of somebody dragging a tree across a ski area where you would expect somebody to be going and then basically taking a lunch. I didn't finish moving the tree, but clearly it's a tree, which is a natural object. I put the tree in the wrong place as the operator at the ski area. I created a situation which is clearly hazardous. That would be potentially gross negligence. But at the same time, it's an inherent risk from the definitional standpoint because it was simply a tree. Or the same thing clearing out a rock or knocking down some deadfall. There's certainly circumstances, Mr. President, under which as an operator at a ski facility, I can manipulate many of the natural surface conditions in a way that is grossly negligent, and potentially then with the passage of this amendment allow for that gross negligence to be prosecuted, but under the circumstance of the definition of C and D, which is collision or impacts with natural objects, there's no possibility of seeking any type of recourse. So, Mr. President, hopefully that clarifies it. To me, it's very clear that that's exactly the type of circumstance that we need to look for ways to work around, where, as drafted right now, if I leave the tree halfway across the ski run, it's a natural tree, and since there's no coverage for gross negligence, I think everything's going to be okay for the operator, when hopefully that's not the intent.
Senator Anselmi Dalton. For your first time, I'd appreciate if you were to speak from before the Senator Roth spoke for a second time, but go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just wanted to point out another example. On G, on page 3, collisions with other skiers is exactly what had happened at a resort where the resort had been notified that a particular skier was drunk on multiple occasions and they failed to take any action to prevent that, and that skier that was drinking and was noted in the ski patrol report actually killed the child. So that's an action that would be gross negligence under G. Thank you.
Send another card for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. I don't know. When I think of inherent risks to skiing, it's not slamming my face into a water pipe or my body into a hydrant. It's maybe hitting a tree. It's maybe going too fast and wrecking in the snow, right? Those man-made objects, which are now completely protected, so they can put a man-made object right in the middle of the path, protected. It's marked. We have an issue of marking. Let's say you come around the corner too fast and you don't have time to see it marked. You do not expect there to be a man-made structure there. I also don't think it's an inherent risk of skiing for me to slam into a snowmobile going across the path. That's now protected. So the protections that we've provided, in my opinion, are much broader than the inherent risks of skiing. So to go to the senator from Natrona County's point, if it doesn't really apply, then what's the harm of having it? If you don't think any of this particular protections related to the inherent risk doesn't go into gross negligence or the potential for intentional conduct, then there's no harm in having this clarification to the statutory language. But I submit to you that it does. I submit to you that it requires ski resorts to use at least the want of some scant care. So it requires them to do that and to take great caution when it comes to where they're locating their man-made structures, how they're driving their snowmobiles, and the responsibility they're taking to other skiers on that ski resort. So I stand for the second amendment to the House Bill 32. Thank you.
Okay, we're voting on third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 32. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no?
No.
That has failed.
Division
being called for. All in favor, please stand. Will opposed? That amendment has failed, 14-16. House Bill 32, having read three separate times, the question is, shall the House bill pass the Senate? Will the reading clerk please call the roll? Senator Office.
We had debate. Sorry, Mr. President.
Senator Meyer.
This one kind of concerns me, and I think it, I'm not sure whether it's any good for the ski areas or if it's even any good for the skiers. And, Mr. President, I guess I'll kind of explain why I'll probably be voting no on this one. Is I look at it and I say to myself, if you're a ski area and you don't do all of these things just right, if you don't have your padding on the obstacles and you don't follow all of the duties, then when you get to court, those things are going to be exposed, and it essentially it begs really to go to a jury trial from the standpoint that if anything is wrong, if you do anything wrong, then that trial lawyer is going to get in front of the jury and he's going to paint you as a bad person all the way if you just do one thing wrong. And once you're impeached as far as doing anything wrong, then it doesn't make any difference whether you did 99 other things right. And the jury looks at it in that vein. And on the other hand, I think the skiers are somewhat protected by some of the things that the duties that the ski areas are supposed to do, the padding on the different things and things like that. I think you're going to have more protection for the skiers. But Mr. President, I don't believe that there's anything that says that the ski areas can't do that already. I don't see there's any reason why they can't look at this list of things either here or in the laws in other states and say to themselves, well, this is the best practices that we should be doing if we're going to be, have a ski area. And that in itself, Mr. President, I think should offer some degree of protection. But to say that we're going to get summary judgments out of this if we pass this, I don't know whether that's going to be the case. Because a good trial lawyer is going to look at these things, and if anything at all is wrong, then the only place they've got to go is the jury. And so I'm not sure whether or not we've hit the happy medium on this one yet, Mr. President. And I just still have some questions.
Further discussion. Senator Coe.
Mr. President, honor and favor of the bill. Number of things. First of all, we're different in Wyoming. We don't have the bodies in Wyoming. We don't have the people in Wyoming. We've got these little ski areas in our communities, mostly raised with nonprofit solicitations. That's how we did the little area in our area. It was closed. We came in, formed a foundation. A lot of people gave a lot of money. They're doing the same thing to those two little ski areas up in the Bighorns. But if you look at a comparison with our state to the south, they have 13 million skier days to the south. We have 900,000 skier days total. The big ski area in Teton County is about over 500,000 of that 900,000. The rest has to do with the other nine areas. One of them's a little bigger, but the rest of them are small. But they're family areas. The area west of the community where I live is so popular with families. It's safe. They love it. It's a part of their life on weekends. And it's part of infrastructure that makes these little communities great. So this is a good bill at the right time. No question about it, I think, to recognize the significance of the rural nature of this state, which is real. It's comparable a little bit to air service. How are we going to have air service if we don't partner up because we're a small rural state? Ski areas are comparable to that. So I ask that you support this bill. I think it's a good bill. I think it's had a lot of work in the interim. It's amended a little bit, but this is very, very important to our small communities around the state of Wyoming. I ask that you support the bill.
Further discussion. Senator Office.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the bill, and I want to be supporting this bill because I do agree with my good friend from Park County that we need to make this clear and do things that are appropriately protective of our ski industry. The concern I have is that this is one of those circumstances where the pendulum swings too far the other way. Right now there's not enough clarity, and with the passage of this legislation as amended, it gets to the point where there really is no balance left. In committee, in discussions, one of the questions I posed was, well, if this passed, what would be an example of something that was not an inherent risk of one of the proponents? That was the question asked. There was no answer. The individual proponent could not come up with a circumstance that was not an inherent risk. So if we've designed a piece of legislation that is supposed to achieve summary judgment and no trial for any circumstance that is an inherent risk, and the proponents of the legislation could not come up with any circumstance that was not qualified as an inherent risk based on this definition, then, Mr. President, I feel like we might have gone too far in protecting the ski areas while sacrificing the interest of the individuals. And this is not a battle between greedy people who are skiing and hoping for a chance to sue the ski resort, Mr. President. That's not what we're seeing here. These are our Wyoming people, as well as folks from all over the country, coming to Wyoming to ski at our ski resorts that expect a safe, positive experience and a good time. They don't expect summary judgment to be unconditional if they have a catastrophic event. I'm worried that if people understand what we're doing here, that might actually hurt our ski area. I know what's going to happen if we pass this, and now all of a sudden I'm concerned about taking my kids up to our local ski area because there doesn't seem to have to be a lot of obligation after this passes. We've heard that there were no lawsuits. There were no examples of lawsuits that could be named. We heard that there was no clear indication that insurance rates would be decreased if this legislation passed. So we don't necessarily see a problem, but we see a hope for a potential solution. Mr. President, the idea is a good idea. I think we could have achieved consensus where everybody was happy, but in this instance, it just goes too far, and I can't support the legislation.
Further discussion. Senator Anderson.
On and for the bill, Mr. President. This bill was brought to the TRW committee because the ski areas do not have a waiver on the day skiers. So they have waivers on the season skiers, but they don't have it on a day skier. And that's the difference in reason they need a little protection. The other side of that is what they wanted to have was the judge in the five lawsuits that were discussed in the interim ask if there was inherent risk in the laws, and there was not. So he immediately said it was going to a jury, then it was settled. So what the little ski areas say is it's okay for the judge to decide that or to decide to put it to a jury if that's what he decides, but he shouldn't have to do that because inherent risk is not defined in state statutes. So we looked at other states to see what they'd done. We came up with a good little bill here. The no lawsuits that were heard in the committee during this session was from an uninformed person that he didn't know that there had been suits, but they'd been settled because they weren't in the record as being lawsuits. So there were five that we looked at during the interim, and they'd all been settled out of court because they didn't want to go to a jury trial. So it isn't that there hasn't been lawsuits, but they have been settled. In fact, one we heard from in this committee had been settled out of court also. So this is a good bill, does what it's supposed to do with waivers and letting the judge have the option of using inherent risk to judge and do the judgment on it. I urge your vote for the bill.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. President, yes, there are lawsuits. There have been lawsuits. We talked about those in the Committee of the Whole, and we talked about some of those lawsuits making it all the way to the Wyoming Supreme Court. And what this Wyoming Supreme Court has asked this body to do is as follows. They note the deficiencies in the Recreational Safety Act of Wyoming. And the court said in the Cunningham case, the Wyoming legislature has failed to expand the Wyoming Recreational Safety Act to include a definition of inherent risks for skiing, to include those items that are listed in the Colorado statute, such as signs, posts, and fences. Without clear legislative guidance, this court is left only with other Wyoming Supreme Court cases and Tenth Circuit cases interpreting the Recreational Safety Act. In another case, Halpern versus Wheeldon, the court said, many of our sister states' inherent risk statutes provide lists of risks which the legislatures have determined are inherent to certain activities. The Wyoming legislature did not provide the courts with that type of guidance. Again, in the Dunbar case, the court has asked for that guidance. Again, in the Rohrman case, the court has asked for that guidance. Again, in the Mueller case, the court has asked for that guidance. This bill gives them that guidance on and for the bill. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Doc Sader.
We'll wrap it up here. A lot's been said, a lot of court cases and so forth. As a father of four, I raised four children at one of these little ski resorts we've been talking about that our good Park County Senator referenced. We started with single chairs. That's it, single chairs. So slow that even my little guys could get up in and go all the way to the top. We were so excited when we expanded to three people could sit across in one chair. All four of my children raised and taught how to ski at a little ski resort that would go well with this bill, on and for the bill.
Okay. Question being called for. House Bill 32, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall House Bill 32 pass the Senate? Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
No.
No. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
No.
No. Bouchard?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case? No. Christensen? Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Ellis?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Hastert?
No.
No. Hicks?
Aye.
Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
No. Moniz?
Aye.
Nethercott? No. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
No.
No. Wasserberger? Aye. President Bebout.
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 22 aye, 8 no.
House Bill 32, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 32 has passed the Senate. Oh, that's the wrong one. Yeah. House Bill 139, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 139, School Finance Court-Ordered Placement, sponsored by Representative Northrup, an act relating to school finance.
There is an amendment. Will the reading clerk please read that amendment in?
House Bill 139, third reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 16.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 139. This is a conforming amendment that staff brought to me. If you'll look, the language that gets deleted on line 16, page 2, contracts with another district to provide education services to the children. To make that conform, we change that to pays another district to provide education services to the children pursuant to the contract, which matches the language you see on page 2 up in line 3. So this is a conforming amendment. Ask for your support.
Further discussion? Ready for the question? Question being called for. We're voting on third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 139. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no. Third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 139 has passed. House Bill 139, having read three separate times, the question is, shall the House bill pass the Senate? Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Excused.
Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Excused.
Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Anderson? Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 30 aye.
House Bill 139, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 139 has passed the Senate. Signing of enrolled acts. Senate Enrolled Act number 19.
Senate Enrolled Act number 19, being original Senate File 43, an act relating to alcoholic beverages.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 19, being original Senate File 43. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 20.
Senate Enrolled Act number 20, being original Senate File 41, an act relating to the administration of government.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 20, being original Senate File number Senate File 41. I so sign Senate Enrolled Act number 21.
Senate Enrolled Act number 21, being original Senate File 100, an act relating to limited liability companies.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 21, being original Senate File 100. I have so signed Senate Enrolled Act number 22.
Senate Enrolled Act number 22, being original Senate File 59, an act relating to government ethics.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 22, being original Senate File 59. I have so signed. Senator Rolak, number 23.
Senate Enrolled Act number 23, being original Senate File 52, an act relating to administration of government.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 23, being original Senate File number 52. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 24.
Senate Enrolled Act number 24, being original Senate File 48, an act relating to farm loans.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 24, being original Senate File 48. I have so signed Senate Enrolled Act number 25.
Senate Enrolled Act number 25, being original Senate File 47, an act relating to state institutions.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 25, being original Senate File 47. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Joint Resolution number 1.
Senate Enrolled Joint Resolution number 1, being original Senate Joint Resolution number 2, a joint resolution requesting Congress to enact legislation requiring revenues received by the federal government from wind and solar energy developments on lands of the United States to be shared equally with the state in which those developments are located.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Joint Resolution number 1, being original Senate Joint Resolution number 2. I so signed. House Enrolled Act number 33.
House Enrolled Act number 33, being original House Bill 6, an act relating to insurance.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 33, being original House Bill number 6. I so signed. House Enrolled Act number 34.
House Enrolled Act number 34, being original House Bill 35, an act relating to the legislature.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 34, being original House Bill 35. I have so signed House Enrolled Act number 35. Senator Meyer.
Yeah, privilege of the floor, Mr. President.
You may.
Mr. President, we have in the gallery here, two of our finest firemen from Goshen County, Mr. President. We have two resolutions here. I wonder if I could escort them in and have you present these resolutions to them.
Absolutely, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Ladies
and gentlemen, fellow colleagues of the Senate, we have with us today two outstanding public servants to Goshen County and the state of Wyoming. Bob Pontarolo is celebrating his 50th anniversary with the Lingle Fire Department. And Bob's, since 1966, has been a volunteer fireman. And he helped modernize the Lingle Fire Department, and He's received many accolades, including the first ever Wyoming State Fire Marshal's Distinguished Fire Service Award in 1994 by Governor Mike Sullivan. Then we also have with us Bill Law, and known Bill for a good number of years. Bill was discharged from the U.S. Naval Service and was admitted to the Yoder Fire Department in 1958. And he held that, elected the Yoder Fire Chief, he held until 62. And Bill worked to create the first fire protection district in Goshen County. And in summer of 62, Bill began his service with the Torrington Fire Department. And Bill's got 58 years in, Bob's got 50 years in, and these are two fine public servants to the state of Wyoming, and I ask you that you help me welcome them to the Senate.
Thank you very much. Someone have a camera, phone or something? Anybody? Get over here, Kurt.
Yeah, okay.
We need to get a picture of this. This is special.
Once again, our volunteer firemen step up and do an incredible job for the state of Wyoming. We're so lucky to have these individuals that risk their lives and do what they do for us. House Enrolled Act number 35.
House Enrolled Act number 35 being original House Bill 60, an act relating to public funds.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 35 being original House Bill 60. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 36.
House Enrolled Act number 36 being original House Bill 70, an act relating to the administration of government.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 36 being original House Bill number 70. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 37.
House Enrolled Act number 37 being original House Bill 195, an act relating to the Quebec One Missile Alert Facility.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 37 being original House Bill number 195. I have so signed House Joint Resolution number 1.
Enrolled Joint Resolution Number 1 being original House Joint Resolution Number 8, a joint resolution requesting Congress to uphold the federal trust responsibility to provide for the health care needs of American Indians.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Joint Resolution Number 1 being original House Joint Resolution Number 8. I have so signed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe we're ready for bills to be for consideration on general file.
Mr. President, yeah, but I think we should take a break before we go to committee of the whole for take a brief recess for 5 minutes to sometimes it turns out that, you know, staff needs a little help. They had a few days off and they got to get back into swing of things. So staff,
blame it on the staff, Senator Perkins. Okay, the Senate will stand in recess till the sound of the gavel, about 5 minutes. Take every break you can get, right? Thank you.
5 minute break. Okay. You hold them through Friday and then you call Ruth.
Okay.
And then she comes and gets him. He won't be back till next Tuesday.
Okay. So today is out.
No, correct.
Okay. I didn't realize.
I haven't been able to do 32 yet because they haven't released the.
I know.
So I'm going to go tell them.
Okay.
I know.
We had a break. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
enrolled act, the SEAs will go to the House.
All right.
And then make sure Wendy knows.
Ready? You guys ready to kick this pin?
Yeah.
All right. All right.
Here we go.
Spray. Yeah, I know she's never done it.
We're at 7 minutes.
Yeah, we're at 7 minutes. First president.
So make sure Wendy knows.
Let's see. These are ready to go to the House.
Yes.
Senate, come back to order. We have a quorum in here yet? Senator Perkins? Thank you. Mr. Vice President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into Committee of the Whole for consideration of fine House bills on general file. You've heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no? Who's up for today?
Senator Anderson.
Senator Anderson. It's all yours, buddy. Here's yours.
That's good. Mic's off.
It's what?
Mic is off.
Oh.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. First bill for our consideration is House Bill 40. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 40, Educational Accountability, sponsored by the Statewide Education Committee, an act relating to education accountability, was referred to Committee Number 4, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Coe, Ellis, Pappas, Raffas, and Wasserberger, Senator Coe, Chairman. Was re-referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Driscoll, Acting Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Coe.
Moving to Committee of the Whole Rise Report, do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 40. There is a standing committee amendment. Ask that the that be read in at this time.
House Bill 40.
Will reading clerk please read the amendment?
House Bill 40, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 4, line 13.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Coe.
I would defer to Senator Raffas for an explanation of the amendment and the bill.
Senator Raffas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 40 is education accountability compliance with the Every Student Succeeds Act. So as the body will probably recall, when education accountability was drafted, it was drafted to comply with No Child Left Behind. With the reauthorization of the Secondary Education Act as the Every Student Succeeds Act, there are conforming amendments that have to take place so that the Wyoming Accountability in Education Act conforms with the Every Student Succeeds Act, which, Mr. Chairman, is actually a pretty good thing. The Every Student Succeeds Act is a much better piece of federal guiding statute than what we had with No Child Left Behind. So almost entirely, House Bill 40 is simply conforming to that, and I'll walk through it. There are a couple of policy discussions that we can have, one of which is in the Standing Committee Amendment, and I'll get to that when we reach it. So, Mr. Chairman, looking on page 2 and page 3, we have conforming amendments, which bring in some further statutory references. On to page 4, there's a substantive change in the addition of Romanet 8, which adds English language proficiency as measured by student longitudinal progress into Wyoming English language proficiency assessments. This is a concept which is required by the Every Student Succeeds Act as one of the indicators pursuant to the Act for English language learners. That's a requirement. You see on page 4, line 22, and throughout the rest of the act also we change content to indicator, which is consistent with Every Student Succeeds Act, and it's just conforming language. We see in the page four, lines 8 through 11, we're going to be removing basically this language, the Standing Committee Amendment. I'm going to move Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 40 at this time and ask the body for favorable consideration if it hasn't already been moved. This is a change where we're striking reference to a 2016 report. So, Senate, there was a revised Education Accountability Report that was released in December 2016, which was actually released slightly after we had this legislation drafted. We include throughout this legislation some reference to it as an update to the 2012 Education Accountability Report. However, upon review of the report and upon further consideration by the Select Education Accountability Group and the Joint Education Committee, it was determined that reference to the 2016 report was probably not a good choice. It wasn't fully complete, and it would be better to strike reference to that, even though the report is a positive report that will be referred to by our technical advisory group. So throughout the rest of this legislation, due to the Standing Committee Amendment number 1, we will be eliminating any reference to that December 2016 report, like you see in lines 8 through 17 at that point in time. Moving on to page 5, that's a further conforming amendment, and we'll see the strike of the revised by the December 2016 report. On to page 6, we have conforming amendments and the inclusion of the indicator word a few times. On to page 7, we are striking language in this statute about schools designated as exceeding expectations and meeting expectations. There's currently a requirement in statute that they file an improvement plan, even though they're already doing quite well. It was decided by the Joint Education Committee to remove that requirement and only have that requirement for those not meeting and partially meeting expectations. Moving on to page 8, you see that conforming language. The conforming language you see at the bottom of page 8 and on to page 9 is just details that were transcribed from the previous page over to this page to conform. Bottom of page 9, conforming amendments. Page 10 and 11, conforming amendments. Page 12 and on to page 13. We have some conforming amendments, but we have the additional language, in addition to the following shall apply to the plan submitted under this subsection. You can see that there's a little bit of amendment for additional language for schools designated as partially meeting expectations under the paragraph and their requirement to file the required improvement plan the first year of designation and submit yearly updates on the progress towards the goals. Previously, you had to report an entirely new report each year. This simply requires updates so long as you're still compliant with the strategies outlined in the improvement plan. Bottom of page 13 is conforming amendments. On to page 14. And then we've just got statute being brought in on page 14 and 15 so that we can do what's on page 16. There's actually no amendment there. We take out the line consequences on 16, line 20, and just end with intervention, which is consistent with the overall strategy of the accountability model as developed over the last few years. Page 17 is a reference to the 2012 Education Accountability Report, which is going to be struck through the Standing Committee Amendment. On to page 18, all conforming amendments. Page 19, conforming amendments. Page 20, conforming amendments. Page 21, this is where we get into some substantive policy change as well as the meat of what was changed in the amendment. This is talking about compliance with ESSA and some requirements within ESSA about how indicators will be measured with regard to the education accountability model. So you see on, let me back up for 1 second and note section 2 at the bottom of page 20. The reason we've moved into a separate section is what we're seeing in section 2 is not yet adopted law. This is Wyoming Session Law, Chapter 113, Section 1, that hasn't been enacted yet, and we're amending that on the next page, which is why this is a new section rather than the previous section, just to clarify why that's happening. So The amendments on page 21, lines 13 through 20, ensure that the accountability model's growth indicator measures growth from grades 4 through 11. You can see we're discussing the longitudinal growth aspect of it. Bottom of page 21, moving on to 22, we talk about post-secondary readiness. And I want everyone to take a look now at the Standing Committee Amendment number 1. We've got some very key provisions here, some key language on how this is being done at the bottom of the Standing Committee Amendment, lines 26 and beyond, where the Standing Committee took a lot of testimony. As drafted in the House bill, House Bill 40, it was confusing what was meant by the college readiness and the post-secondary, as well as the college and career readiness aspect. So basically, the Standing Committee scrapped the language that you see in House Bill 40 and had it rewritten in such a way that hopefully it provides further clarity, which you can see in the new Romanet 4, where post-secondary readiness, as defined to include college readiness and career readiness, this is one of the indicators, school-level performance shall be based upon the percentage of students meeting either college or career readiness. That was a recommendation of the technical advisory group. So there's this and-or discussion that surrounds this particular area, and that helped to clarify and how this would be carried out. And then you see that career readiness shall be measured, this is on lines 40 and beyond, by student performance in accordance with other provisions in this title, as determined by the State Board of Education in consultation with the State Superintendent. There was some ambiguity throughout the statute as to whether the State Board in consultation with the State Superintendent would be making determinations here, or the State Superintendent in consultation with the Board. It went back and forth. So for consistency, the Education Committee has it established such that it is the State Board of Education making these decisions in consultation with the State Superintendent and WDE. That's the bulk of what the Standing Committee Amendment does, other than remove that report. You'll see a little bit more detail on the Advisory Committee coming up on page 24. On to page 23, we have conforming amendments. Moving 23 on to page 24, let me pull up the section analysis one moment. The section 3 that we see on page 23 repeals the college entrance examination from being included in the academic progress indicator, so it is not counted more than two times. Right now, our college assessment is used several times over the course of the accountability model, and therefore it's overweighted. That was a recommendation by the technical advisory group. Section 4 repeals the continuation of the Select Committee on Statewide Education Accountability. This is a major substantive change. Right now, as the body knows, there is a Select Committee on Education Accountability that has been working on this legislation for the past several years. This legislation has gotten to the point where that committee, Select Committee, is eliminated, and those responsibilities would then be handed over to the Joint Education Committee based on the assumption that most of the work is done, so it goes to the JEC. Section 5 repeals the communication plan for the schools meeting and exceeding expectations, as mentioned previously. Section 6 continues the Advisory Committee to the Standing Committee Amendment and adds up to 2 members from the House Education and 2 members from the Senate Education Committee. This is sort of in lieu of having a Select Education Accountability Committee. It just puts 2 members from each chamber on the Education Committee onto the Advisory Committee to ensure that there's sufficient representation. I'm getting a suggestion that it's switched to 1, but I see that on Standing Committee Amendment number 1 as being 2 each. We see that page 24, line 6, the Advisory Committee shall include up to 2. So it's not a requirement of 2, but it's up to 2 from each of the chambers, and that was in the final amendment from the Standing Committee. Moving on to Section 7. Section 7A is a requirement that the Advisory Committee work with the Joint Education Interim Committee to identify additional indicators that might be used in the accountability model, specifically ESSA, that Every Student Succeeds Act, requires there be a fifth indicator for high schools, and we don't have that worked out yet. So that's a task for the advisory committee. 7B requires the State Board of Education to report back to the JEC on post-secondary readiness indicators identified for the college and career readiness, as we discussed earlier. 7C requires the State Board of Education to conduct a professional judgment panel to calibrate the accountability model when we have the new statewide assessment implemented in the spring of 2018. That will be the first year that we have the new statewide assessment available, and we'll have to rescore the tests in consideration of the education accountability model. Moving on to page 26, section 7D, requires the advisory committee to study the impact of removing 9th and 10th grades from the statewide summative assessment. However, you'll see in the standing committee amendment number 1, the second page, line 9, deletes that. We already had a recommendation from the advisory committee to include 9th and 10th grade assessments from the summative assessment, and we weren't sure why they would give us a different answer the second time if we asked them the same question again. Section 8 amends prior session laws to remove any reference to the Select Committee on Statewide Education Accountability and inserts Joint Education Committee. So from this point forward, it would be reporting to the JEC instead of the Select Education Accountability Committee. And then finally, moving forward, clear to the end, we see our Section 9, page 34, which are the effective dates. Where there are a split effective date for sections 4, 6, 7, and 8 that become effective immediately, and the B section, except as provided in subsection A of this section, this act is effective July 1st, 2017. So those things that need to get underway immediately are covered by section 9A. With that, Mr. Chairman, we are on the Standing Committee Amendment number 1, so I would take any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment. And if there are no questions, I would call for the question.
Question has been called. You're obviously ready for the question. All those in favor of Senator Roth's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 40, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. I'm trying to decide. It passed.
I think it passed.
It passed.
Mr. Chairman, with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, hopefully with the support of some of the members of the JEC if I run short on answers. Thank you.
There is a Committee of the Whole Amendment. Can we have that read in?
House Bill 40, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, to engrossed copy, page 24, line 15.
Senator Coe, to House Bill 40.
Am I on?
You are.
Thank you. Move Committee the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 40. This comes in, as you'll see on page 24, line 15, deletes Legislative Service Office, and the reason that gets deleted is because there's no more Select Committee on Accountability, and so the State Superintendent through the Wyoming Department of Education is going to take over that process. You'll see that the majority of the amendment is on the bottom of page 30. We delete Legislative Service Office and insert Department of Education shall staff the technical advisory group. The Legislative Service Office may retain consultants as necessary to staff and advise the technical advisory group. So that's all in there, and then we delete that language. Go on over to page 31, lines 1 through 5. This is where we talk about the Department of Education, because they, first of all, will take over this function, and second of all, they say they can fund it. So we don't need to come up with any more money. We turn this whole process over to the superintendent and the Department of Education. That's what the Committee of the Whole Amendment does. This is mostly a cleanup amendment brought to me by staff. Ask that you support it.
Any discussion? Question being called, you're ready for the question. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 40, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. That motion has carried. We are now on House Bill 40. Any discussion? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I've got some questions on this, and let me start out saying I see one of these big conform with the Fed's bills. The first question comes to mind, are we doing something here that we want to do because it really is positive for us, or are we doing something, Mr. Chairman, because it's not positive, but it's required to get federal money that we can't afford to be without, or have we got a circumstance where we'd be better off without the federal government? That's, Mr. Chairman, the general background. That's why I'm going to ask the question I'm going to ask. The No Child Left Behind Act, that was the predecessor to this federal act, you know, at least I understood with that one where they were trying to go. They were seeing large parts of the population just being ignored and abandoned by parts of the educational system, when in fact the then Secretary of Education had proved down in Houston, running the school district there, that you could educate those people. And they were trying to correct that. Now, being the feds, they botched it. And it didn't work very well. Mr. Chairman, what do we expect out of the feds? But my question is this new federal act, is it an improvement on the No Child Left Behind, keeping the same goals but trying to get better implementation? Or are they doing something entirely different? Or have they just dumbed things down so much that anybody can get there and there isn't the pressure anymore? What's really going on? Can we have a quick summary of what's going on with the federal act?
Senator Wasberger?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And try and answer that question. As you know, the No Child Left Behind Act was passed on January 8, 2002, and it was, in many ways, very difficult act to achieve. It required 100% passage by all students, and of course, that was never going to be reached. And so eventually, all schools were going to be failing. And we do have a new law called the Every Student Succeeds Act, and the problem right now is we don't know what that act is, because the new president has taken away all those regs, and so they are rewriting those regs in the United States Department of Education. And I've actually lost a little bit of track of that since we've been down here since the 1st of January, but those regs have not been released yet. But I would like to say that we haven't walked away from accountability. If you look at the No Child Left Behind Act, we're conforming with that, and that did not change in the Every Student Succeeds Act. The requirement is the same. But you need to understand that we did have a debate in the committee over assessments, and we chose to additionally assess students at the 9th and 10th grade. And then also the career readiness piece adds an additional test at the high school level if a building principal or a high school should want to take that student, and instead of taking the other test that we have, which we all know the name of, they have to take that test still, but they can take the career readiness test also. And the reason why we chose to do that was because it makes a better system, and we'll have better data as a result of that. And so we're moving forward. So, in essence, Wyoming's assessment system is more advanced than either the No Child Left Behind Act or the Every Student Succeeds Act. And so we'll have more accountability, we'll have better data. Hopefully down the road we can improve student achievement as a result of that data and then improve our high school students and where they are. But I think that's as much as I can give you at this time.
Further discussion? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, so this bill we've got in front of us then is going to result in our collecting more data, and particularly the 9th and 10th grades. My question is, who's going to use that data, and what can they do with it?
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, just ESSA, one of the things that it does designate in there, first of all, it requires accountability, as a good senator from Gillette alluded to, but it lets us do that more on a local basis, but it puts that charge in the hands of the state school officer. That's why you see some of the changes we have in this bill. And I don't know if that really answered your question. Well, I'm not sure what your question is. Maybe we ought to go through that again.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
My question is very simple. You know, it costs you something to get the data. It has a monetary cost. Perhaps more importantly, it has a cost in terms of the student's time and effort in school. That's worthwhile if we're really going to do something with the data and something's going to be different because of it. And what I'm asking is who's going to use the data and what kind of things are they going to use it to do? There's no point in having data, Mr. Chairman, just for the sake of having data. You got to use it for something. It should improve the management of the school system. So who's going to use this new data and how can they use it?
Senator Ruffus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To answer the tall senator with a nice new haircuts question, the Wyoming Accountability and Education Act, when it was initially formulated, really was intended to provide feedback to school districts where we have a system of support. So the idea is we have an evaluation process in place that provides us with a series of different characteristics for all of our schools and school districts. So on a school-by-school basis, you end up with these ratings of not meeting expectations, partially meeting expectations, and exceeding expectations. So we have that for every school in the state. There are different parameters that go into that. And those were crafted within the state not because of what No Child Left Behind told us to do, but actually we worked pretty hard on trying to come up with what was the best approach to an accountability system in the country. And in some ways, there was some tension between what we did and No Child Left Behind. ESSA relieves that tension and actually encourages a system that's basically our Education Accountability Act with one more component. So we pretty much nailed a good best practice on that. So the idea as the Accountability Act moves forward, Mr. Chairman, is to get to the point where we not only have school assessments, but we have this system of supports in place where the Department of Education checks in with all of the schools and districts that are not meeting or partially meeting expectations and provides, or works with them, I should say, to put together an improvement plan. So it is an active, collaborative process where there's identification of difficulties and struggles in growth, achievement, equity, college and career readiness as the primary indicators. Based on those scores, then, the state will come in, work with the district, try and come up with ways to improve those scores and move forward, and then that cycle will continuously repeat, hopefully, until everything works just great. Now, Mr. Chairman, bluntly, we're not that great yet on the system of supports. There's a lot of work that has to be done, but it's certainly underway. That's the next step, really, down the path for the Accountability Act. But the assessment that we have in place, based on recommendations by the Technical Advisory Group, really is just exactly what we need to make these decisions and to end up with good policy recommendations and to know which districts to work with. Hopefully that answers the tall senator's question.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, it does in part, but I really wonder in this whole assessment business, accountability business we're in, when are we going to actually do something? When are we going to start seeing all this wonderful system we've got and the data we're collecting actually get used to focus what efforts on improving our school system? And I think that maybe what I'm doing is outlining what I think are the next steps, Mr. Chairman. I do have one final question. If we don't pass this bill and conform to the Fed, how much is it going to cost us?
Senator Wasserberger with an answer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe I looked into the cost of the ninth grade test, and I was told that it was $280,000. So you're essentially looking at about $500,000 for the ninth and tenth grade assessment. We have a request for proposal out. I'm assuming that the career readiness assessment would be work keys. And I don't know what that cost is. It is an additional cost, and that's one of the reasons I believe, at least for me, looking at this assessment is why I was opposed to that, but I'm willing to accept what the committee does because it is a better assessment system. It gives us better numbers. And the question for the good senator is, how are we using this information? And I really believe that our elementary schools are doing a much better job at using the data to improve assessment scores than maybe we as secondary teachers have done. And if you look at our scores nationwide, you would see that our fourth graders do better, our eighth graders do better, and then we don't do as well as we should at the high school level. And it will take some time. The high schools are going to have to work together. They're going to have to take that data and decide how their science, their math, their reading improves and push that forward. So I hope that answers your question.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it doesn't, because the real question I was trying to ask is, suppose in about 2 minutes we kill this bill. What are the consequences with federal funding? Do we lose a bunch of federal money? And so
have my Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are very, very close to in compliance with the ESSA, better than probably any other state in the country. So if we were to kill this bill right now, other than the fact that I would have to be on the Select Education Accountability Committee for another year, I am not sure we would lose any federal funds. There are few, if any, states in the country that are closer to compliance with ESSA than the state of Wyoming is with our current Wyoming Accountability and Education Act. Now, as far as what is standing at risk, it's a pretty substantial amount of money if we were a few years from now and we're not making progress towards it. And I want to say on the order of $100 million of federal funds total, $130, something along those lines, theoretically could be withheld, but that doesn't happen and hasn't happened. It only happened, to my knowledge, Mr. Chairman, there was a substantial threat to a city in the Midwest that was going to not comply with No Child Left Behind and had a threat of $1 billion withholding as a result of it. So threats have been made in the past, but at this point it's early enough in ESSA where realistically if this bill does go down in 2 minutes, I just have to book about 10 more days of meetings and then the rest would probably work itself out.
Question. Senator Cole. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, just briefly, the federal funds that was alluded to by the good senator from Albany County, that's correct. It's about $135 million. I just found out the data. You know what the data will be used for? I think that's your main question. The data will be used for the statewide system of support to improve schools not meeting and those schools only partially meeting expectations. So that's the overall goal of how we use the data.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I appreciate our education senators answering several of the questions that have been posed. Just to add to what my friend from Laramie has pointed out, I think to answer the Natrona County Senator, I think we would lose opportunity as well. I mean, I think obviously if you find yourself out of compliance 3, 4, 5 years down the road, there could be ramifications from federal funding, and the senator knows all about that from his days on in the Department of Health dealings and whatever. But that's really not the concern. I think that the senator from my good friend from Gillette's hometown kind of led this effort back in Washington to roll this new law out, and I think it poses some opportunity for us to kind of pave our own way. And the efforts that we've made on this accountability front, senators, has really put us in good stead. And I think now we have an opportunity to roll out this career readiness piece. That's a piece that we're trying to get our arms around. I think it's going to provide us with some good data. It gives a little bit different path to a lot of those students. We've talked about that many times on this floor. Not every single student is you know, on his or her way to a master's degree. There's other paths, and the superintendent has championed things like military ready, career ready. I think that gives us an opportunity here, and I think it's going to provide us with some pretty valuable data. We've talked about improvement of schools. This is where it starts. This is where we're going to try to find the kind of data that can help us make some good decisions going forward. So I think it's a good effort. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the House or the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation to House Bill 40, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. Well, it's pretty massive. House Bill 40 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 41. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 41, Court-Ordered Placements, Age Restrictions, sponsored by the Education Committee, an act related to education, was referred to Committee Number 4, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Coe, Ellis, Rothfuss, and Wasserberger, excused Senator Pappas. Senator Coe, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, move in Committee the Whole Rice and Report do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 41. Just to continue a good thing, I defer to Senator Rothfuss.
Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. Chairman, if you like that one, you're going to love this one. Mr. Chairman, fortunately, this is a lot shorter. This is addresses a concern that the Joint Education Committee has had for a while about those students on court-ordered placements and age restrictions associated with them. And the meat of the bill is actually on the last page. You can see on page 2 and page 3 is simply conforming amendments, as well as a quick fix on page 2, line 9, of changing plan to program, because that's accurate. IEP is an individualized education program. But the meat of the bill is page 4 in paragraph K, changing the statute for court-ordered placements-based education, where rather than existing law where you have to be at least 6 years of age but under 18 years of age, this extends the allowable age for educational assistance related to court-ordered placements from 5 years of age as of September 15th of the applicable school year, so that's our beginning enrollment period, but who are under 21 years of age. We have a large number of individuals, not a large number, it actually turns out to be 22 when you see the fiscal note, that would currently be affected, who are between age 18 and 21. There are still a requirement for providing educational services, but our statutes don't provide for the funding for those educational services. So this remedies that, Mr. Chairman, by allowing that age to go up to 21, where we still have some obligation to teach those individuals but didn't have the funding formula for the court-ordered placement correct. So this remedies a problem in statute. The for clarity or clarification for everyone here, the way these court-ordered placement funds work, we had another piece of legislation that was removing the redundancy where there's an ADM that's associated with it, and it only goes to the COPS fund, the court-ordered placement fund. There's a special pool of money that comes out of the school foundation program account to pay for those. The 22 students that would be covered under this would have what is effectively an additional ADM associated with them. It's not an ADM, but it's the rate of $154 per day for them to be going through this. And the total estimated impact to the school foundation program account is $1.1 million for one school year based on current school year costs. And again, I'll reiterate, though, that based on our non-double dipping approach, the ADM would be offset because we'll be taking away the ADM that they currently get at around $17,000 per year. I hope that clarifies this piece of legislation. If there aren't any questions, I'd call for the question on it. Good little bill.
Any discussion? Any discussion? Sensing there, you're ready to vote. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 41, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. That bill has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 64. Reading clerk, please read the bill.
House Bill 64, engrossed, move over requirement, sponsored by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to the regulation of traffic on highways, was referred to Committee Number 8, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Baldwin, Christensen, and Meyer. Excused, Senator Agar. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman Anderson. Mr. Chairman, I move the committee whole rise report it do so with a do pass motion on House Bill 64 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. Chairman, there was a standing committee amendment. I would ask that the reading clerk read that in at this time.
House Bill 64, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 2, line 4.
Senator Meyer.
I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 64. Mr. Chairman, this bill's been a couple years in the making. A couple years ago, it was before our interim committee. We asked the department to try to communicate to people through their signage efforts on the interstate in different areas to be courteous and to move over and not to drive hazardously when people were parked alongside the roadway. If you remember, I think it was just last year, there was a highway patrolman down in Colorado that was killed while assisting a motorist on the side of the roadway. What we've done to do, what we're seeking to do in this bill is to provide basically a penalty for people who are driving hazardously when there's a parked vehicle alongside the road. The folks that are in the utility industry were very much in support of the of this effort, and the amendment, I guess I'd like to explain that now on the work that we did in our Senate committee. We deleted section 315915 in a couple of places where it was cited. That, Mr. Chairman, was a simple turn signal, and we felt that it was inappropriate to have someone with a turn signal that may or may not be in a hazardous situation. They are just simply parked alongside the road. There's no indication that they you know, would have to change a tire or do those other things that are hazardous. Then we went on to say and to add some clarity where there's some ambiguity as far as when you actually have to move over. And Mr. Chairman, it's for a parked vehicle that's on or within 3 feet of a roadway. We used the 3 feet distance because we had a bicycle bill that came through here a year ago, and that was the distance that you wanted to maintain from a bicycle driver who was driving on the white side of the line, that we wanted to make sure you were at least 3 feet away. So we felt that was a reasonable area to be, that if they were within 3 feet of a roadway, that would provide the necessary safety if someone was on or around their vehicle. It's it's extremely hazardous, Mr. Chairman, when people are parked alongside the road and another car drives by at full speed. On an interstate in Romanet 1 on page 2, we asked someone to move over to the other lane. When you're on a two-lane road with a posted speed of over 45 miles per hour, and essentially your county roads are posted at your 45 miles per hour, except in rare instances that you slow down to a speed that's 20 miles an hour less than the posted speed limit, which gives somebody a little bit more reaction time if they do see something happening on the side of the road where they have to try to get away from that circumstance that may occur. Mr. President, as I say, this has been about 2 years in the making.
Chairman here.
We tried to do it with information. It didn't work. We brought this bill back through the interim, and I think we've got it tightened up with the work that we did in our committee. And with the explanation of the Standing Committee Amendment, I would ask for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Question been called on the Standing Committee Amendment. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 64, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Motion is carried.
I think I've explained the bill there fairly well. Essentially, if you see the flashing lights for either utility vehicles or any vehicle, you're supposed to be courteous. You're supposed to move over. And if you don't and you operate your vehicle in a hazardous manner, then you're subject to potentially, if there's a law enforcement there, to a citation. We could have some discussion whether $120 is too much or not enough. That's where it came from the House. The committee left it at that, feeling that that was certainly enough to be a deterrent. I'd stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Any discussion? House Bill 64. Sensing you're ready for the question, all those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 64, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no.
No.
That House Bill 64 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 93. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 93, engrossed, Witchy Repayment Program, Veterinary Medicine Students, sponsored by Representative Larson, an act relating to the Western Interstate Commission for Higher Education, Witchy Repayment Program, was referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, and Landon. No, Senator Hastert. Senator Driscoll, acting chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 93, Witchy Repayment Program, Veterinary Medicine Students. There are no reason, I shouldn't have looked already, there are no standing committee amendments, and for further explanation of the bill, I ask that you call on the co-sponsor, Senator Baldwin.
Senator Baldwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring you today House Bill 93, a short bill, three pages of bill, as a matter of fact. Fairly straightforward in its purpose. I'll just give you a little bit of the history of it, give you the pros and cons, more pros than cons, because I want you to vote for it. The WITSE program, for those that aren't familiar, is something called the Western Region Higher Education Compact. It was actually formed in 1952. Wyoming joined the compact in 1953. The most recent member joined in 2011. It's a compact that was formed to allow students in Wyoming to get a graduate degree in medicine, dentistry, podiatry, occupational therapy, a number of degrees that were not available in-state, by helping them pay their tuition, by paying the difference between in-state tuition and out-of-state tuition. These students would be able to go to their selected university, get their graduate degree, and the hope was by helping them with their payment that they would return to practice in the state of Wyoming. With an idea to gain more professionals at a time when there was quite a shortage of a lot of these professions in the state of Wyoming and getting these people to come back. A very successful program, fairly amazing it's still in existence after all those years. In 2011, in House Bill 103, they changed the statute requiring all but the veterinarian students to repay their loans if they didn't come back to the state of Wyoming. And I would relate a personal experience, not with WITSE. I myself had an offer from another state to the west of us when I went to school who paid for my tuition, and then when I searched for a job, there wasn't a job. I saw the light. I came back to Wyoming, and then that state said, thank you, but now you need to owe us money. It was inconvenient. It was a lot of money, but my wife forgave me, and I paid that loan back to that state. This year in this legislation, what we seek to do is what we didn't finish in 2011. In 2011, all the other professions are now paying back their loans if they don't stay in Wyoming. We'd like to close that loop this year by including veterinary students who go out of state. We help them pay for their education, but they go to another state to practice. It's a fairly significant cost to the state of Wyoming. There's 8 students per year, so there's 32 students out there at any given time. Right now, the majority, if not all, of those students are going out of state to practice and not coming back to Wyoming. We felt like it's time that maybe they can pay back their loans to us and help us and not cost Wyoming so much. And even if they can come back, that's great. If they can't, then they should repay those loans. And with that, I would ask for any questions.
Any discussion? Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I understand.
Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand the rationale for this bill. But the reality is the job market and the workforce needs in Wyoming at this time can't support 8 new veterinarians every year. There aren't enough jobs in Wyoming to support these recent grads. If our students are forced to come back to Wyoming or repay WITSE loan support, which is approximately $32,000 a year, for a total of $128,000, Mr. Chairman, on top of already having to repay their base loans, which average about $150,000, then my guess is that many of these talented students will simply drop veterinary medicine as a career and go elsewhere. We already lose a fair number of bright, talented students once they figure out they're already going to owe about $150,000 in student loans with WITSE support, making them pay the equivalent of out-of-state tuition and fees if they choose to start their careers out-of-state, which is about $55,000 a year, will drive a great many of them away once they figure out what the situation is ahead of them. Now, the majority of them do want to return to Wyoming, but there is not enough jobs. They're young and naive, and most can't afford to live in Wyoming immediately after graduation because of the costs. Now, I understand the motivation here. We support them. They should all come back to us. It just isn't that simple because of the wage cost disparity that these students are going to run into. I think we need to be realistic and appreciate the fact that quite a few of them do come back to Wyoming. But I think we should also understand we're asking these veterinary students to repay their bills, while in fact we provide the Hathaway scholarships with no repayment. And there's the possibility that we could provide tuition waivers for veterans. So I stand against this bill, even though on surface I understand the motivation, but I think it will drive a great many talented and good students into other careers and into other states. I think we'll lose. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other discussion? Senator Boner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a quick question about just the overall, I guess, environment that this program is operating within when it comes to our veterinarians. I just want to make sure I absolutely understand that, given that, to my knowledge, there's no veterinary medicine program in the state of Wyoming, all these funds are being expended out of state. I just want to make sure I understand that as we move forward.
Senator Ruffus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have two questions. The first is, what's the repealer repealing? Something. And the second question is, just so that I have the numbers right, I believe we end up with eight witchy veterinarians, and I'm not sure if it was witchy veterinarians each year, at about $150,000 total expense for their years of training, so about $1.2 million is what we spend, I think, on these veterinarians. I just wanted to confirm those numbers.
Senator Scott.
And Mr. Chairman, my question is, if the market is so saturated with veterinarians, why do we have such trouble finding ones that will treat a large animal?
Senator Baldwin.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. To field some of those questions, first of all, for the senator here in front of me, one of the senators in front of me, we'll answer one at a time. The funds are expended exclusively out of state. This is all out of state universities, as we don't have any of these programs within the state. There have been some movement to establish some of those things in state, but at this point, most of those things have not been established. So, indeed, all those funds do go to out of state academic facilities. Number two, the other senator in front of me, not quite directly in front of me, his numbers are exactly what we're expending, are right on the money. $1.2 million is exactly right. The repealer is just repealing that, I believe, and I don't have it right here in front of me, but it just repeals that section that said they don't have to pay back. And that was the exception in the original, where we accepted the veterinarians out of the program previously. And to the tall senator with the extremely good haircut today, the answer for that, I don't know, because I know my veterinarian makes me do my own at large animals when they need something. He said, I know how to sew them, so he's not going to come do it. And that's what actually this program was originally for. As a good veterinarian here will tell you, that was where the shortage was at, was in the large animal market. The money in veterinarian schools, I understand, or in veterinarian services, is in the small animals, treating Fifi and treating the dogs and cats and those kind of things. And so this is where the shortage was, and it sometimes continues to come in large animals, but right now at this point, as we've talked about, there is no shortage. We simply, these students can't find a job in Wyoming generally when they come back. Now, I would say to some of those things that across the board, all these professions that leave the state to do all these different things that they can't do in-state come back at a variety of wages. Some of them, of course, come back at a very high wage. Some come back at a fairly low wage. In the profession I'm in, I came back at a fairly low wage. My student loans were astronomical, probably more astronomical than these students who were talking about veterinarians, but they're across the board. Some of these students come back with huge, huge bills, student loans. Some come back with higher or lower, and some come back with a higher or lower wage. It's not, you can't put them in any one slot. So with that, I would encourage your vote for this bill. It's to bring everybody into the fair playing field and encourage your vote on this bill.
Senator Baldwin.
Senator Barner, excuse me. Thank you. When I went to optometry school, they would give a witchy scholarship
to like three students from Wyoming a year. And so there must be a certain amount of veterinary slots that they fill. So my question is, why can't we just direct the Ritchie board to take that number, if it was eight, and drop it down to four? Then we might alleviate the problem.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The University of Wyoming, quite honestly, takes no stand one way or the other on this subject. But in anticipation of the worst to come, which I expect, they are going to probably drop the number of Ritchie-eligible students to six, just in the case of too many students, not enough jobs. So I think that number will be reduced, as the good senator from the east or the west talked about. This is a very selfish thing I'm asking, but because of the job pay out the salaries and the cost for education, I ask for you to defeat this.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Sensing you're ready to vote, all those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 93, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. House Bill 93 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 98.
House Bill 98, LLC Dissolution Distributions, sponsored by Representative Greer, an act relating to limited liability companies, was referred to Committee Number 7, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Nethercott, Pappas, and Scott. Excused, Senator Agar. Senator Case, Chair.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I move over that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 98, LLC Dissolution Distributions. I believe that the good majority floor leader is prepared to talk about this bill.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ring for your consideration, House Bill 98. You can see it's white still. It's there have been no changes to it, and you can see it's really easy. All it does is if you look, there's no engrossed on it, man. So it's not a gross bill. It's not even engrossed. But anyway, with respect to that, all it is changes that for distributions, they can be paid in money or other property. Right now, what happens when you dissolve a limited liability company, there's a hierarchy of what you do with the money that you get as you liquidate or wind down a limited liability company. First it goes to creditors, then it goes to repays contributions to members who have transferable interest, and then it goes is allocated, the rest of it is allocated among members or in accordance with the operating agreement or some other statutory things. What you have there is if you read the existing statute that was product of a rewrite a number of years ago. These are, I think, one of the things that you find that need to be fixed once in a while. This allows it to be paid in money or other property. That's important because there are a number of times when you would just as soon distribute property, Mr. Chairman. The old statute requires someone who's unhappy or wants to be a thorn in the side to force a sale of property, which ultimately results in a taxable realization to the members. A lot of times you can transfer property out without selling it, can transfer it out in kind. You can avoid making that taxable subject requiring a sale, which makes it a taxable event. So it is one of those things I think that overstepped in the original bill. This brings it back and makes it so people have the opportunity to distribute in money or another property and keep someone from demanding distributions in money when it's to the disadvantage of all the other members. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd ask for your favorable vote or stand for questions.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Sensing you're ready for the question, all those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the
Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 98. Say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. House Bill 98 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 156. With the
House Bill 156, engrossed, Involuntary Commitment Emergency Detention Amendments, sponsored by Representative Barlow, an act relating to involuntary commitment, was referred to Committee Number 10, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 156 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
House Bill 156, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, to engrossed copy, page 2, line 10.
Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, explain the Standing Committee Amendment briefly. The page 2, line 10 is just a technical clarification. Page 3, that amendment there, we're improving one of the key points in the bill, and this is another one of the bills trying to improve our situation with regard to Title 25 and involuntary commitment. This is the current language in the bill is we'll provide somebody with the referral information. We had in committee an expert who actually does this work and gave us this language, where what you do is you actually not just provide the referral information, but arrange and make the appointment right then and there with the patient right there, and that makes more certain that it's going to be followed, and that was a, we felt was a better procedure, Mr. Chairman, so I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I urge adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment.
Any discussion? Any discussion?
Questions.
Sensing you're ready for the question, all those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 156, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. That amendment has passed.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Scott.
Mr. Senator. Chairman, I yield to Senator Peterson for an explanation of this good House bill.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bring to you House Bill 156, which addresses, as the good chairman has mentioned, our Title 25. Specifically, as you remember, Mr. Chairman, last session we addressed with Senate File 58 of last session a concern that we had to try to enlarge the services to some of these Title 25 by introducing incentives for convalescent leave, incentives for outpatient treatments rather than inpatient hospitalization, those type of things. But in so doing that, Mr. Chairman, we ran into some difficulties in trying to bring those people back. For example, if a person was giving convalescent leave or being treated as an outpatient through different providers or services, and they relapsed into a serious situation and detention needed to be considered again, how do we bring those people back into the process? So that's what this bill is about. On page 2, we talk about three different areas that the person can be brought back into some type of a detention. On top of page 2, line 1, the law enforcement officer, that's present language. But in line 5, we talk about a court has entered an ex parte order, or a little Romanette 3. And line 9, a hospital revokes convalescent status, release of a person pursuant to that statute. So there's other options available with this bill to try to bring these people back into some type of care. The bottom of page 2, the underlined information there, if the person is detained following a preliminary examination, an examiner shall re-examine the person not less than every 48 hours until the hearing under subsection H through K of this section. So we're talking about throughout this bill, remember, folks, that we're talking about 23 different counties with different assets available to them, how to treat these individuals. So it's somewhat all-inclusive, trying to remember that there are different tools according to what county's out there. We talked about the amendment on page 3. Then the rest of it's just wordsmithing throughout. It's basically talking about care setting rather than a suitable facility, because some of these counties don't have a facility rather than maybe just a care setting. Again, we're talking about patients or detainees that need to be maybe observed for 24 hours or reexamined. So we talk about the examiner or the gatekeeper. Bottom of page 3, we talk about his parent or guardian to any attorney representing the person, to the county attorney in the county where the person is detained, bringing in a parent or guardian or county attorney. Again, we talk about the county attorney on the bottom of page 4 on line 19. On line 20, shall be filed with the court if continued detention is sought. And that's what this bill is again about, continued detention. This is a person that's been examined, has gone through the process, been released on convalescent leave or some type of outpatient treatment, and trying to be brought back in if they've relapsed. Again, it's what's best for the patient, recognizing they have rights. The last big change is on page 7, line 6. Item N, treatment provided as a result of an emergency or continued detention pursuant to this section shall be provided in the least restrictive and most therapeutic setting available, with consideration given to requests of the detained person, his parent, guardian, or attorney, and recommendations of any gatekeeper. Treatment may include the treatment options outlined in that statute. That's the bill. It's basically trying to address a situation caused by us in trying to promote more outpatient treatment or convalescent leave, and if the person relapses, how to bring them back into the system, and this is the bill that would do that. So I'd ask your favorable consideration. We stand for questions.
Senator Bebelt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Part of our statutes dealing with Title 25 talk about a situation, and the language in there deals with threat to themselves or threat to others, and I know we had a study done, and I think it was shown to us that by changing that language, we could save about 15% on the cost for Title 25. And I know you and I have talked about that, my colleague from Cali, and yet I don't see that in this bill. Is that in another bill, or is that something you're going to address later? Because I thought that was a very legitimate way to have some real savings to Title 25, and it's the definition we put into the statute that expanded it, and I think it went too far. And when I've talked to people, I've talked to the department, we could bring that back, and I think it would be beneficial to all. Why is that not in here?
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Briefly, there are two different types of examinations and assessments when a person is detained. And the first one is the 109 process. And this is basically when a person is detained temporarily and assessed and then released. And this addresses that person. The 110 process, I got that reversed. The 110 process, this one addresses. The 109 process is a little, it's the first assessment that a person goes through. And from that point, then the 110 happens, and then possibly detained for longer periods of time and possibly state hospital or some type of other service or rehabilitation service. So to answer the president's question, basically it wasn't ready for prime time yet. The endangered to themselves or others is certainly a consideration. But the people in that particular process or that particular stage of the assessment has already been through the, already in that process. And the question was by the providers when I showed them this proposed bill, this session, they became concerned about these people have already been assessed, they're already in the system, and it seems like then we would just be cutting them loose. And again, the question remains, what's best for the patient? And that's the thing that's first and foremost throughout this entire discussion when we talk about Title 25, not just their rights, but what's best for the patient. As we consider that they are, might be endangered to themselves or others, and what's best for their families, but primarily for the patient themselves. And so because that wasn't quite ready and they had that concern, we thought we'd let that sit for a year, let this Senate File 58 of last session and these cleanup bills such as this one take root and proceed from there. Again, not everybody's on the same page with Senate File 58 last session. We have a pilot program in one of our counties to the north of us, and that's about it. And it's somewhat disappointing because we know that there's cost savings there. We know that there's better treatment for patients if it was followed through. We're just starting to, some of our outlying areas, just starting with this gatekeeping process and going through this 109-110 process more fully, allowing outpatient services and convalescent leave more so than just automatic hospitalization. So with those cost savings, we thought we'd let the dust settle a little bit and then bring that particular bill back, addressing that concern that the President has, possibly next session during our budget session, and do some more cleanup then. But just to let the dust settle just a bit was the decision that we made.
Senator Bebelt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that response, and certainly, you know, it's a major step. But I think part of the issue is with the provider themselves when they make that determination. And I think they look at that statute and it gives them a lot of leeway so they can take whatever risk they want to or set it at whatever level they want, but they really don't necessarily do what's best for the client. And I think that's a serious problem, and I think that's a big flaw in the process. It's hard to come in and do that now, and I understand that. I guess I would say that, yeah, I'll think about it a little bit. Maybe there's a way to amend it. I'll work with a sponsor of this legislation, but we're really not getting to the bottom of the issue by not addressing it. And I think maybe now is the time. So we'll talk about it a little bit more. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 156, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. House Bill 156 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 275.
House Bill 275, engrossed, Driver's Licenses Revisions, sponsored by Representative Eklund, an act relating to motor vehicles, was referred to Committee Number 8, which turned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Baldwin, Christensen, and Meyer. Excuse, Senator Agar. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
I've heard of the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a do-pass motion on House Bill 275, Driver License Revisions. There was a standing committee amendment. I would ask that the reading clerk read that in at this time.
House Bill 275, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, to engrossed copy, page 1, line 9.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 275. I will explain the bill, and in doing so, I'll explain the amendment. Mr. Chairman, what this bill seeks to do is to allow the Department of Transportation to exempt agricultural carriers of their goods when they take them to market in the same way that other states that surround us are exempted. And we do that through a rule and regulation requesting that the department adopt the rules of and the requirements under pursuant to Title 49 of the United States Code, and that's granted by the Secretary of the United States Department of Transportation. There's the Standing Committee Amendment deals with the intrastate transportation. The Department of Transportation deals with the interstate transportation of agricultural products by ag producers. And within 150 miles of where the main operation is of a agricultural producer, they're allowed by the United States Department of Transportation to transport those goods absent the requirements that are basically put upon the commercial carriers. And if we go into the amendment, some of those requirements that are intrastate are things like the powers and the duties of the department to regulate contract motor carriers. And again, a contract motor carrier is someone that carries goods for profit. If a farmer or rancher desires to carry goods for profit or charge someone for it, they are no longer an agriculture producer exempted under the federal rules, and they would become a contract motor carrier the same way, if anything, in intrastate. It also goes into the areas of issuing a deposit of insurance. I can tell you that the minimum liability coverage for a contract motor carrier is $750,000. In our particular operation, we have $2 million worth of liability coverage. It also exempts the cards and decals and placards that are required to be on the side of the truck, and the placards and decals that would be required for different types of loads. However, you cannot haul hazardous materials. You can only haul agricultural goods. So, Mr. Chairman, that kind of explains the amendment as we go into and bring in the intrastate exemptions. And I can tell you that Nebraska is at 90,000 pounds, and the state of Colorado is at 85,000 pounds. The committee sought to go to 80,000 pounds because that's the essentially the weight that the state of Wyoming is restricted on as far as the interstate highway system. And that's something we can't really change because we didn't raise that amount before we got under the wire as far as the number of axles. Now, there is a interstate or motor carrier weight schedule in the statute, and that applies, but it does not apply to agricultural carriers. So, Mr. Chairman, what we're seeking to do is to essentially put Wyoming in the same position as all the surrounding states that have a exemption that's been granted by the Department of the U.S. Department of Transportation. So I think that explained the amendment. If there's any questions on the amendment, I would stand for those. If not, I would call for the question.
Any discussion? Senator Von Kletter. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the level of qualifications are the same level of qualifications that are determined by the United States Department of Transportation, and that is essentially a holder of a Class C license.
Further discussion? Further question? Question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment 1 to House Bill 275, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. That motion is carried. That amendment has carried.
That is the amendment. The amendment basically corresponds with the federal regulations for the interstate regulations to the intrastate regulations. And I would stand for questions on the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions on the bill? Senator Von Flatteron.
Thank you. Just for the sponsor, not, it seems like this is deja vu. We've seen this one before. Last time we brought it up to 55,000.
but now we're at 80,000 pounds. And in the 31.7109 area, it does say either we'll take a test or be signed off by somebody that is capable of driving, and they will have previously owned a Class A or B license prior to July 15th or some 2015 or something. Does that all go away in this? They can just drive at 80,000 pounds under these other two exemptions under 31.18.103? Does that all go away and they can just drive?
Senator Meyer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the Z authorization stays the same as it has been. That doesn't change. The Z authorization was primarily for folks that had these fifth wheelers and the horse trailers or the goosenecks. And what this essentially does is allow holder of a Class C license to able to do in Wyoming the same thing that they do in all of the surrounding states. And so it's within that 150-mile radius. It's only hauling your own goods and services, and it's not hauling it for profit. And that's exactly the same thing that the other states do, although Wyoming, we're at 80,000 pounds, where Nebraska is at 90,000 pounds, Colorado's at 85. I can't tell you what South Dakota and the other states are, but I can get that for you. But I'm sure that it's at least that 80,000, if not higher. The federal regulations actually say there's absolutely no limit whatsoever. Federal regulations, you could haul 130,000 pounds, and that's what the feds are good with. They're Jake with any weight. Your committee felt that 80,000 pounds is a reasonable commercial weight for people to transport their own goods to and from the farm to the market with that 150-mile radius, and so that's what we settled at.
Any other discussion? Any other discussion on House Bill 275? Sensing you're ready for the question, all those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 275, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. House Bill 275 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. That motion barely carries.
I'm going that way.
Reading clerk will please read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under considerations bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 40, engrossed, do pass amended. House Bill 41, do pass. House Bill 64, engrossed, do pass amended. House Bill 93, engrossed, do pass. House Bill 98, do pass. House Bill 156, engrossed, do pass amended. House Bill 275, engrossed, do pass amended. Senator Anderson, Chairman.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Concurrence requests. Senator Coe, you ready on Senate File 36? Reading clerk, please read it in.
Message number 329, referencing Senate File 36, Education Leader Evaluation and Support.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do concur on message number 329, being original Senate File 36, Education Leader Evaluation and Support, and ask the body to vote aye. Mr. President, the First Amendment, the Standing Committee Amendment, really goes in, that's more of a conforming amendment. That goes into page 7. You'll see over there where they insert professional standards, and if you go back over On the top of page 6, you'll see identify professional standards by the state board. So that's just a conforming amendment. Mr. President, Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 comes in and on page 6 and puts a period after district, deletes and then leaves that paragraph intact with a new capital V. So that paragraph reads, the State Board through the Department shall evaluate alternative leader evaluation systems provided by districts. If you go over to page 9, you see where they delete the Select Committee and insert Joint Education Interim Committee. That's because the Select Committee on Accountability goes away. Then, Mr. President, on page 6, lines 9 through 11, we go back down and they wordsmith that paragraph. At the bottom of page 6, lines 9 through 11, insert, any alternative leader evaluation system shall be approved by the State Board through the department before adoption. I don't think that changes the intent of what's going on here. So, Mr. President, I'd ask that you do concur and ask you to vote aye on message number 329.
Further discussion? Further discussion? The motion is that the Senate do concur on message number 329 to Senate file 36, and you've been asked to vote aye. You vote aye, you vote to concur. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
No.
Bouchard, no. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
No.
No. Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
No.
No. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott? Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Excused.
Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Fladen?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 26 aye, 3 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur to message number 329 to Senate file 36. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe that clears my desk.
Yeah, I did. Mr. President, I move that we stand adjourned after this long, arduous day until 10 a.m. on Wednesday, February the 22nd.
Announcements. Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will, upon adjournment in about 15 minutes, meet with a like committee from the other house down at the JAC room to discuss the conference committee on the budget bill.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., Jonah Room S27. We'll start out with a discussion within the committee of possible joint interim topics in preparation for our eventual meeting with the House committee. And then we'll consider House Bill 62, Engrossed, Immunity for Drug Overdose Reporting, and then House Bill 209, Engrossed, Disparity in Wages and Benefits Between Men and Women.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, meet tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock. Listen up, committee. We're meeting in room L54, 8 o'clock, to take up House Bill 194, Engrossed, School Safety and Security. House Bill 190, Hathaway Reserve Account. House Bill 189, Engrossed Higher Education Non-Resident Tuition. And if time, House Bill 191, Engrossed Hathaway, Expand Wyoming Scholarships.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, your committee, agricultural number 5, will be meeting with a like committee 15 minutes upon adjournment of both houses in room S27 to take up interim topics.
Senator Von Flader.
May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
I want to remind everybody that 5 o'clock, about 10 minutes ago, the interim topics needed to be turned into LSO on the written form sheet, so make sure you got them in. Thank you.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Judiciary Committee number 1 will be meeting Wednesday, February 26, tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. at Jonah S18 to consider the following bills. House Bill 15, engross sex offender registration fees and penalties. House Bill 197, engross marijuana and THC products policy reform act.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 8, transportation, will meet on Wednesday, the 22nd, at 6 p.m. at the Joint Forces Readiness Center room, Platte Bridge A, 5410 Bishop Avenue, to consider the following bills. House Bill 202, engross motor vehicle insurance penalties, continued from 215. House Bill 101, school districts veterans employment preference. Then, Mr. President, immediately following that meeting, your joint committee will meet at the Joint Forces Readiness Center, room Platte Bridge A, 5410 Bishop Boulevard, to consider joint transportation interim topics.
Further announcements. Senator Meyer, is there an announcement from the National Guard about a gathering? Is there something like that going on here in the next day or two?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We're meeting out there because they're going to have a memorial ceremony for Wyoming's fallen warriors. The ceremony will be held at 5:30, from 4:30 to 5:30 at the Joint Forces Readiness Center. Mr. President, I believe there's been 4 fallen warriors, I believe, and I encourage everybody that can go to that and honor our fallen warriors.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. The Senate is adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Wednesday, February the 22nd.